Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking at a really pivotal document from South Africa, Breaking New Ground, or BNG.
That's right, from the Department of Human Settlements back in 2004.
And this wasn't just, you know, tweaking things. It was designed as a complete overhaul of housing and urban planning, a mandate for pretty radical change.
Exactly. And for this deep dive, we're focusing on the overview, getting a handle on the big picture. Why was this fundamental shift needed? What was it trying to move away from?
Good question. Because there was a housing policy before this, post-1994.
Right, and it did important work. It stabilized a system that was, frankly, a mess inherited from the apartheid era. Very fragmented.
But things changed fast in that first decade.
Yeah.
Socially, economically. The ground shifted under that policy.
It really did. The old approach, while stabilizing, just wasn't equipped for the pace of change. Urbanization was accelerating, and critically, this damaging split was appearing in the housing market. Yeah, a duality. It was actually making inequality worse in some ways, not better. BNG was basically an admission that just building houses wasn't cutting it anymore.
So the goal had to change.
Completely. From just shelter to creating integrated, sustainable human settlements. A much bigger, more complex idea.
Okay, let's dig into the why. The crisis context. What numbers were forcing their hand?
Well, first, just sheer population growth. Between 96 and 2001, the population jumped by about 10.4%.
Which is over 4 million people. That's a lot.
It is. But honestly, the household formation numbers were the real alarm bell. That's what really drove the need for BNG.
What happened there?
Planners expected maybe a 10% rise in the number of households needing homes. Makes sense with population growth, right?
Yeah, seems logical.
Instead, they got a 30% increase. 30 in the absolute number of households formed in just those 5 years.
Wow, three times what they projected. Why such a massive difference?
It was a sociological shift, really. The average size of a household was dropping fast, went from 4.5 people in 96 down to 3.8 by 2001.
Ah, so smaller families or more single people needing their own places.
Exactly. More individual units needed, far more than anyone had planned for.
And this surge in demand hit a system that was already struggling.
Struggling is putting it mildly. I mean, look, the government poured a huge amount of money in our $29.5 billion, delivered 1.6 million housing opportunities.
Sounds impressive.
It does. But the backlog of people living in inadequate housing didn't shrink. It actually grew to over 1.8 million dwellings.
So despite building all that, they were falling further behind.
Precisely. Running backward, essentially. That 1.8 million figure. I mean, for perspective, that's like needing to build a whole new city, maybe the size of Philadelphia, just to catch up with existing need. It was a clear sign the policy wasn't working.
And underneath all this demand, you mentioned the property market itself was a problem. Broken, even.
Yeah, fundamentally. That duality I mentioned, you had about 30% of the market, sort of first economy doing really well, investment flowing, property values rising, wealth being created.
Okay. And the other 70%?
Stagnation. Disinvestment. Especially in the historically marginalized areas, the townships, inner cities. No wealth creation happening there through property.
Were financial institutions playing a role in that stagnation?
Oh, definitely. The BNG plan calls it out directly, redlining. Banks were effectively refusing to invest or approve mortgages in certain areas, townships, inner cities.
Cutting them off from the financial system for housing.
Exactly. So if you owned a house there, you couldn't easily sell it, couldn't borrow against it to improve it. Your main asset was essentially frozen. That just locks in inequality.
And then there was the delivery pipeline itself. It was actually slowing down.
Dramatically. Housing delivery peaked around 1997, then started to fall off, and provinces weren't even spending the money allocated for housing.
Money was being sent back?
Yes. Budget rollovers. Unspent funds. It hit something like 23% in the 2002-03 financial year. A huge chunk of the budget just wasn't being used.
Why? Lack of capacity?
Mm-hmm.
Or something else?
Both, probably, but a big factor was profitability. The way the subsidies were structured, the margins became too thin for the big construction companies. So they pulled out of state-assisted housing.
Leaving a gap.
A massive gap. Smaller emerging contractors couldn't fill it fast enough. The whole financial engine of delivery was seizing up.
Okay, so against that backdrop, huge demand, broken market, failing delivery, BNG arrives with this new vision.
A radically different vision, moving beyond just the physical house, the unit of shelter.
Towards creating these integrated, sustainable human settlements.
Right. And that meant redefining housing. It wasn't just welfare anymore. It was an instrument of economic policy. BNG laid out 7 specific objectives.
Let's touch on those. Accelerating delivery was still key, but framed differently.
Yes, framed as a direct strategy for poverty alleviation and linked explicitly to job creation using housing construction to generate employment.
Making property accessible as an asset for wealth creation was another one, tackling that market failure.
Crucial, and this is maybe the biggest ambition. BNG aimed to support the entire residential property market, not just the low end.
Why the whole market?
To tackle that duality head on. To try and consciously break down the barriers between, as they put it, the first economy boom and the second economy slump. Using housing to try and mend the economic divide.
That's a massive ask for housing policy. Fixing the national economy and geography.
Hugely ambitious, yes. And it required some major strategic shifts. First, expanding the department's remit, no longer just focusing on the poorest.
They had to look at the whole market.
Including that missing the medium income households.
Right. Let's define that group again. They earn too much for the old subsidies, but not enough for a standard bank mortgage.
Exactly. Households earning between roughly R3,500 and R7,000 a month, they often couldn't save up the deposit needed for a bank loan. Stuck.
So BNG proposed a specific tool for them.
Yes, a new subsidy mechanism. It was linked to credit, so you still needed a bank loan, but also linked to savings. You had to show you were saving. And the subsidy itself was designed primarily to help bridge that down payment gap, to unlock access to bank finance for that group.
So state funds leveraging private bank lending.
Precisely. Injecting demand and liquidity right into that middle segment, hoping to reduce the market duality.
Makes sense. What about the spatial side? Fixing where people lived. BNG moved away from just uniform houses, right?
Big time. Away from what they called product uniformity, those endless identical houses often built far from jobs and services.
Towards what?
Towards being more responsive to demand, recognizing that sustainable communities need different things. Access to transport, jobs, schools, varied housing types, different tenure options like renting or owning, more choice.
And the huge challenge of informal settlements, often growing in precarious places. What was the plan there?
A strategy called progressive informal settlement eradication. But eradication here mostly meant upgrading in place.
So improving the settlement where it is, if possible.
Yes, strongly preferred, especially if the location was actually decent, near opportunities. In situ upgrading was the default. Relocation was really only a last resort, if the site was dangerous or completely unsuitable.
Any examples of that approach?
They pointed to the N2 Gateway project in Cape Town, involving areas like Gugulethu, Khayelitsha, Langa as a major pilot for this kind of complex, phased upgrading.
And for integrating richer and poorer areas, BNG pushed for densification.
How? One key proposal was investigating something called residential development permits.
Okay.
And the crucial part was a potential requirement for developers building new residential projects to set aside maybe 20% of the units for low-cost or affordable housing, sometimes called inclusionary zoning.
Forcing income mixing within new developments. That usually faces pushback.
Absolutely. Developers often worry about property values. The plan acknowledged this, actually.
Wow.
It suggested that, at least initially, to overcome resistance, the affordable component could potentially be built somewhere else, off-site, a pragmatic compromise maybe to get the principle established.
Interesting. Now, land is always a huge cost, especially well-located land near cities. How did BNG address that? It often pushes low-cost housing to the edges.
This was a really clever fundamental shift in budgeting.
Okay.
BNG basically said, acquiring well-located private land to fix apartheid spatial planning isn't just a housing cost. It's a broader societal cost.
I see. So.
The funding for buying that strategic land wouldn't come directly out of the housing subsidy budget anymore. It would be financed separately.
Taking that massive expense off the housing department's books.
Exactly. Freeing up more of the actual housing subsidy money for building houses, not just buying expensive land. A big relief for the housing budget.
Okay, let's swing back to those existing townships, that stagnant secondary market. How did BNG try to get things moving there?
Two main tools. First, they brought back an individual subsidy, but specifically for buying existing houses.
A demand-side subsidy.
Right. But targeted purely at secondary market transactions, buying a house that's already there in those previously redlined areas, injecting cash directly into that market to stimulate sales.
And the second tool.
Mm-hmm.
It related to selling rules.
Yeah, the restriction on selling your government-subsidized house. Under the old Housing Act, you typically had to wait 8 years.
Right.
BNG proposed cutting that down to 5 years.
Why?
to make the houses more tradable, to increase mobility for beneficiaries, let them move if they needed to, and unlock the asset value sooner. If you can't sell your asset, it's not really performing its function, is it?
Makes sense. And there was also the issue of title deeds, wasn't there? People living in houses they didn't formally own?
A huge issue. Millions of properties, mostly old public housing stock.
Yep.
BNG committed to ramping up efforts under the discount benefit scheme.
To do what?
To get those properties formally transferred into the names of the occupants, give them the title deeds, making them legally owned, tradable assets.
So we've covered the vision, the market shifts, the spatial ideas. What about the machinery, the institutions, the money needed to actually do all this? How did they fix the funding issues that saw developers walk away?
A major subsidy overhaul. They got rid of the multiple tiered subsidy bands for those earning under R3D500 a month.
And replaced them with?
A single uniform subsidy amount for everyone in that income bracket.
Why uniform?
Simplicity, partly, but mainly to ensure it was enough to make building viable for developers, addressing that profitability issue. And crucially, it was set to be automatically adjusted for inflation each year.
Ah, taking away the need for constant renegotiation and preventing the value from eroding over time.
Exactly, providing more certainty.
And connecting back to Objective's job creation, BNG linked housing directly to the expanded public works program, the EPWP.
Very explicitly. They set a target, quite an aggressive one, of 70% labor intensity for state-assisted housing construction.
70%, meaning prioritizing manual labor over machinery.
Essentially, yes. Maximizing local job creation during the building process. Procurement, construction, the whole chain.
That sounds great socially, but doesn't that potentially slow things down?
Yeah.
Or affect quality compared to more industrialized methods?
That's the trade-off, absolutely. It's a definite balancing act. BNG was making a calculated bet
that the jobs were worth it.
That the economic injection from widespread employment plus the skills developed locally would outweigh potential losses in pure construction efficiency. It put job creation right up there alongside unit delivery as a primary goal. A big philosophical shift.
And the final piece, institutions. You said BNG shifted power downwards.
Dramatically.
Mm.
Away from national and provincial control towards local government. Municipalities.
How?
It moved away from developers driving the process. Instead, municipalities, starting with the big metros, were meant to take charge of housing delivery in their areas. But they had to be accredited first.
Meaning they had to prove they could handle it.
Basically, yes. They needed to show they had set up proper housing departments, planning committees that worked across different sectors.
And the really key part.
They had to integrate housing planning, the needs, the locations of projects directly into their main strategic plans, the municipal integrated development plans, or IDPs.
So housing couldn't be this separate thing anymore.
No more islands. It had to be woven into the fabric of local planning infrastructure, transport, economic development, local government owning the budget, the spatial choices, the whole coordination effort.
The aim was real coherence at the local level then.
Complete coherence, making sure housing projects actually fit into and supported the broader community development goals.
Okay, so wrapping this up, the sheer scope of BNG is, well, it's immense.
It really is. As you dig into the details, you see it wasn't just one policy. It was documented across 7 detailed business plans.
Covering everything from market stimulation, spatial planning, institutional changes, jobs.
Exactly. It correctly saw that you couldn't fix housing in isolation. You had to tackle the economy, the geography, the institutions all at the same time. An incredibly ambitious diagnosis.
So here's a final thought for you, the listener, to take away. The BNG blueprint itself was arguably visionary, comprehensive, intellectually sound, maybe. But its success hinged entirely on this massive, intricate dance of coordination, not just cooperation, but deep, sustained, functional coordination between national, provincial, and local governments, plus the private sector, especially banks.
Yeah, that coordination is the linchpin.
So the question becomes, was the biggest challenge drafting this ambitious plan, or was it the enormous, potentially decade-long task of building the institutional capacity, the bureaucratic muscle across all those players needed to actually deliver integrated settlements instead of just houses? Can a brilliant plan succeed if the machinery to execute it isn't quite there yet? That's perhaps the enduring question BNG leaves us with.